All right, guys, pictures up.
Pictures up.
Pictures up.
Let's roll sound.
Rolling.
Rolling.
Sound speeds.
Camera speeds. Two. Asham, take two. Mark.
Set up.
Set.
And action.
Welcome to the Penn Cinema Podcast, your behind-the-curtain connection for movie news and reviews. Now, here are your hosts, Penn Ketchum and David Moulton.
Welcome to the show. I'm David Moulton.
And I'm Penn Ketchum.
What's up?
You know, just out here living the dream.
Doing our things, making the time go.
Yeah.
That's what we always say, you know, as of today. Man, it's been, you know, I woke up this morning thinking about the show, as I do every day.
Obviously, yeah. Same.
And I was like, I feel like there's not a lot going on this week, news-wise.
Right.
Like last week was slow, this week feels slow, and then I remembered, this upcoming week or so would have been Comic-Con. So normal news rotation would have had things slow down right before Comic-Con, and then we'd get into stuff. Now, Comic-Con's still happening virtually, and it worked for San Diego, and I think New York's going to have their hands, like, down on how to do it a lot better.
Really?
Yeah.
And you're saying it's happening right now, or it's happening, like, this coming weekend?
I think it's usually the first weekend in October.
Okay, so it's coming up.
So it would be next weekend. So I'm pretty sure it's happening over next weekend, and I would not be surprised if we started to see more news come out about things when that happens.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So
it's October 8th.
Okay. Yeah, that makes
October
sense.
October 8th to 11th for the New York Comic Con Metaverse.
Ooh.
The metaverse is just 10 short days away.
Are you ready for the metaverse?
I mean, we did pretty well with the Spider-Verse, so, you know, we'll give the metaverse a shot. I don't know. I think that's cool. Like, I have no idea. I mean, for me, Comic-Con is always, I always feel a little bit like an outsider because I'm not as educated, and I don't speak comics as well as most of the folks. I love it, obviously, but when I go, my focus, rightly so, is always on what's happening in the movie industry. Mm-hmm. So my hope this year for Comic-Con is that we get through Comic-Con either at a minimum with no more titles getting pushed out of 2020. Oof. And at a maximum, I would love some studio to represent at Comic-Con and be like, we are so psyched to commit to, you know, Dune on December 18th.
Right.
You know what I mean? And No Time to Die on November 20th. Like, and Soul on November 20th. And Croods too. You know, I want these studios to, first of all, stop the bleeding. And second of all, reassure everybody that, like, yeah, we're not going to screw up 2020 any more than we already have. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so. I feel like it's an opportunity for the movies that are going to still come out this year, like Wonder Woman, hopefully, Dune, to kind of run away with things at Comic-Con.
Right.
You know, like, it's their chance. It's not only do they have an opportunity to be in the spotlight, but they have an opportunity to be in the spotlight fairly uncontested.
Right.
So it's a big opportunity.
So if you're at the Metaverse at Comic-Con, and you're not you, you're just a regular comic fan, you know, excited to, it's sort of typical attendee. What is bigger news? Dune or Wonder Woman? I'd probably Dune, right?
I think that in the community, Dune will probably be the bigger news, but I think to general audiences, Wonder Woman's going to be bigger news.
Yeah, I think Dune is the bigger news, just because it's our first real look,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I wonder if they'll drop some more clips or something like that.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised at how close we are with how little, like, promotional material there's been. especially since it was supposed to come out in November originally.
Right.
So, I don't know if I think that I'm taking it as a good sign, like, because Dune is very heavy sci-fi and it's like it's not full action, and if you're going to bring people in, you got to advertise what people want to see.
Right.
And we're going to get into that later. And you know, and I think that the way they've advertised it now looks very actiony, and that'll bring people in that might not normally come see the movie. And if you have too much of a promotional period, you can wind up losing some of that appeal because you start showing not the bad things, but like the things that aren't general audience appeal.
Right.
Am I making sense there to you? You give me a look like maybe I'm not.
No, you're making sense. What I'm trying to, I'm thinking while you're talking, I'm also thinking about how I think the studios are tentative. Like, in other words, like, am I going to spend $10 million promoting a movie that next week the executives in Hollywood are going to push back, you know? So I feel like marketing departments throughout Los Angeles are probably being held back a little bit. Like, hey, don't, you know, this is our plan. This is how we're going to promote the movie, but don't pull the trigger until you get the green light from upstairs.
Yeah. It's crazy because I was reading an article, 70% of theaters have reopened, but the companies are still making their major decisions based on LA and New York.
Right.
Which is awesome. Crazy. Yeah.
We talked about my sticky note, right? I still have it on my...
Sorry.
Exactly. Yeah. Lest we forget who screwed who on September 25th of 2020. I had some friends over the other day, and one of them said we should email a picture of the sticky note when the guy tries to book the film.
Yeah.
Instead of type, because I was bragging, I was like, I'm just going to write him back one word, sorry. And and my friend said, what would be even better is just email him a picture of the sticky note. I think that would be great.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of thinking I might go ahead and do it.
Well, while we're on the downtones of everything kind of moving around, let's just cover some of the, you know, pushbacks and moves ups and stuff. Black Widow has been pushed back from November to May 7th. So big, big pushback from Disney on this one, which is, I mean, I hate to see it go to move, but I'm almost at the point now where if you're going to move your stuff, pick up your boots and move it.
Yeah.
Because I'm tired of the every other week it's pushed back.
Right.
You know, like just bite the bullet and move it out if you're going to do it, or stick to it and let it come out. Like,
yeah.
Like stop teasing us constantly.
So this marks a 1 year delay for Black Widow.
Right. And as a result, the rest of the Marvel lineup is going to fall in place. Some things aren't getting pushed back a full year. But we're talking about, usually Marvel has a spring, 1 to 2 summer, and a fall. Like, generally, it's been 3 to 4 movies a year with their production.
Right.
So everything's kind of been, all the spring stuff is now summer. Summer is now late summer to fall, et cetera, et cetera. So
up is down, black is white, cats are living with dogs.
Who knows? Here's one that kind of disappoints me is Death of the Nile has been pushed back to December 18th. Still this year, still holiday coming out. Hopefully it sticks to it. I was really looking forward to that movie.
I was really looking forward to that one as well. The thing that has me scratching my head on that decision a little bit, like the underlying thought process I understand, because Death on the Nile is going to appeal to the older demographic and they're the most nervous about coming back out.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, okay, if they're not going to be comfortable in October, they're not going to be comfortable in December.
Yeah, right.
You know, so I would have maybe just pushed it to, like, March.
Right, right.
Although maybe they have high hopes. Maybe they looked at the December release schedule and they were like, we need something besides Dune, and Death on the Nile would be great.
Now, these have all been Disney films, right? Death of the Nile is Disney?
Well, yeah, I mean, Fox, but
right,
yeah.
Right, yeah. So we have Marvel, Death of the Nile, Fox.
Yeah.
But here's a surprising one. Soul is sticking to its November release date.
Yeah, that was the big surprise on this whole... There was a whole story that broke where I read all the news. I happened to read it in Variety. But this was the biggest surprise of all these titles, because you sort of feel like there's already a November family title with Croods 2. I think this is great. I mean, obviously, I guess it goes without saying, this is great news. And I mean, Thanksgiving now, if the titles that are on the schedule now stick, which would be No Time to Die, Soul, and Croods 2, that's a decent Thanksgiving lineup. I mean, there'll be other smaller titles to fill in the blanks. And, you know, that's a solid lineup. And I think that, you know, if theaters can stay open till November 20th, then, you know, we got a shot at it.
Yeah. Yeah. West Side Story was pushed back a full year to December 2021. Now, this is a Steven Spielberg movie version of West Side Story. This is what surprised me about this movie. I know we talked about it coming. I had no idea it was supposed to come out in December. No promotional material, which makes me wonder if it's even ready.
So a year ago, we looked ahead to 2020 and we saw In the Heights,
right?
Hamilton, West Side Story, and there was another, I thought there was another one more Broadway show. So I, to me, this is kind of like Death on the Nile. Like, I kind of get it, because especially West Side Story is going to really appeal to an older audience. So to me, this is like West Side Story, like whatever. I wish it was opening next week. I wish it was opening this fall, October, something like that. But the fact that it's moved a year is like, I shrug and move on. Like, it's not...
Right.
It doesn't make or break the schedule. The Kingsman, this was another surprising move. This got moved up to February 12th, so sooner rather than later. What do you make of this move?
I don't know what to make. I don't know what to make of this movie. I don't know if they believe in it or they don't believe in it. It's hard to tell.
I think that they, on a scale of 1 to 10, it's probably right in the middle.
Yeah.
You know, it's probably like a 5. They probably believe in it enough that they're sticking to it, but it's obviously not a top title. I think that this is a real strategic move. That puts it open on Valentine's Day. They'll promote up the pretty boys in the movie and have a Valentine's Day release. I think this decision, this announcement, is less about what they think of the movie and more just a plain look at the calendar.
Here's
what's coming out. We have a pretty good movie. Let's stick it in February 12th.
Especially if things are being spaced out and they're thinking about March and, you know, getting the max amount of time that people have to go see this, if they're still reluctant to go to the theaters in February.
Right. So. Which I don't think they will be. We're already seeing, I wouldn't count it as a news item, but yesterday, which was Saturday, Penn Cinema in Lititz, and actually all three locations, but it was most notable in Lititz, we had our best day since we opened.
Nice.
And the reason why is because it was a gray, rainy day in Lititz.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's kind of like some things never change. You know, rainy days are good for the movie industry. And what that told me, what the hope that I drew from that, you know, day was once we get back with titles and once we have good product to share. I mean, we do have good product, but we don't have tons of it. I mean, Tenet is in its fourth week, Unhinged is in its fourth week, New Mutants is in its fourth week. So, or I'm sorry, those first two are in 3 weeks. But my point being, I think that we're seeing that when it's raining outside or when we have good movies, people are coming out. The opening weekend of Tenet was seriously dampened by the governor's limitations on attendance. So, you know, I think that the success of a rainy day tells me that by February 12th, we're going to have no problem getting an audience for Kingsman. Honestly, I don't think we're going to have any problem on November 20th with No Time to Die, Soul, and Croods 2. So... that's exciting for me. I think that's nothing but good news.
So something that I've been asked several times, restaurants have moved to 50% capacity. Does that include theaters?
Yeah. So technically, it's so funny that you would say that, you know, ask me this, because yeah, I get the same question everywhere I go, and I think that the most honest answer I could give you is it really depends who you ask. I spoke with two different people, one of whom was a lawyer and one of whom was another entertainment industry operator. So not a movie theater operator, but you know, somebody who's in the entertainment business. And we were debating, is it 50% because some entertainment industry locations are selling seats at 50% occupancy, and then people with multiple screens are supposed to be limited to 25 people. So what we are doing at Penn Cinema, and again, I think everybody knows from listening to podcasts, like, we take the pandemic very seriously. We're all about safety and masks, and you know about our seats, and you know about our safety precautions and all that kind of stuff. So we are taking the common sense approach and making sure that in theaters where, like, for example, the IMAX, you know, we're not going to put 300 people in that theater.
Right.
But at the same time, we're not going to limit it to 25 people either. That just doesn't make any sense. I mean, that's a massive single screen operation and it has 428 seats. You know, so it's really sort of a moving target. And so technically the answer to your question was restaurants are going up to 50%. Does that apply to the movie theaters? And the answer is no. But I can tell you that a lot of people are looking at that language differently. And it's interesting because a lot of the language coming out of Harrisburg has been vague, which a lot of my colleagues are complaining about. I'm choosing to see that as a positive thing because it allows a little bit of interpretation. So we're still very much limiting our capacity. And as we move forward, I anticipate that we'll continue to loosen up those restrictions, you know, bit by bit for as long as it, you know, is done safely.
Right, right. Cool. Well, something that's not being done safely. And that's the choices behind the movie Monster Hunter. Let me read.
Is this a theatrical movie?
Yeah. As far as I'm aware, it's like a Resident Evil style theatrical film, which is a bummer because the games are really cool looking. And let me just read you the synopsis for Monster Hunter starring Mila Jovovich.
I wish we had better sound effects for our podcast. I think that should be our goal for 2021, is to have better sound effects, because this would be the perfect time to introduce our new segment called Reading Time, Story Time with David Moulton. And I picture like a nursery rhyme theme song with like a little music box, you know, playing, and like a real soothing deep voice. And now, story time with David Moulton. And then like, you know, settle in, kids, get your cup of hot chocolate ready, because David's going to read us a bonkers synopsis.
Yeah. All right, here we go. Behind our world, there is another, a world of dangerous and powerful monsters that rule their domain with deadly ferocity. When an unexpected sandstorm traps Lieutenant Artemis, Mila Jovovich, and her unit, T.I. Harris, Megan Good, Diego Bonita, to a new world, the soldiers are shocked to discover that their hostile...
Shocked.
An unknown environment is home to enormous and terrifying monsters immune to their firepower. Dun, dun, dun. In their desperate battle for survival, the units encounter the mysterious hunter, Tony Jaa, whose unique skills allow him to stay one step ahead of the powerful creatures. As Artemis and Hunter slowly build trust, she discovers that he is part of a team led by the Admiral, Ron Perlman, facing a danger so great it could threaten to destroy their world. The brave warriors combine their unique abilities to band together for the ultimate showdown.
Dun dun dun! Wait, so can you break this down for me? What is this movie about?
Apparently, dimension hopping. I guess regular regular modern day soldiers get teleported to a new world
via sandstorm. Sandstorm.
Well, that's how it happens. You didn't know that?
Well, I as a policy, generally try to stay away from sandstorms. So, you know, this is just another reason as far as I'm concerned.
Except for that song, Sandstorm.
Right.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah, Monster Hunter involves these giant dinosaur-like monsters that people fight with giant, over-the-top, huge swords. If you Google images for this movie, you will see Mila Jovovich with giant swords. I'm talking unrealistically giant swords, not like, oh, she's got a big sword, like,
right? No.
Yeah Final Fantasy style huge things, and they jump around and they fight giant monsters.
So you're not sounding like you're a big fan of this movie. I mean, we like Mila Jovovich.
I mean, and in theory we do.
Okay,
do you like the Resident Evil movies?
I don't think I've ever seen one.
Well, that's why you still like Mila Jovovich.
I'll have to watch one.
Those movies have their place, and this is that. I think it's going to be that level.
Okay.
Style, kind of like schlocky, not schlocky, but it's, you know.
Yeah.
Not the best in the world, but.
You know, I know these are two totally different worlds, but you know what I'm picturing here? Picturing Hellboy.
Yeah, unfortunately. I mean, I love Hellboy. But there are names involved here that, like, I don't know. To me, it sets the tone of what kind of style and what level of production you're getting. And that's, first off, Mila Jovovich is leading, which all of a sudden I'm like, okay. And then secondly, Ron Perlman is playing a character. Okay, all right, I know what they're going with, you know. But
yeah.
Sometimes these type of films can be really successful. Look at Pacific Rim.
Who? Pacific Rim.
Yeah. I think it's the same caliber.
Yeah, all right. So. You know what just a sidebar that I'm curious if anybody feels the same way, any of our friends who are really good at remembering movies. I have a friend who one of his all-time favorite movies is Pacific Rim.
Really?
Yeah. And he is strongly of the opinion, and this is where I'm interested to hear if anybody agrees with him. He's strongly of the opinion that Pacific Rim is upside down Avengers. Like instead of the Avengers having to protect from the sky, Pacific Rim has to protect from below, and it's sort of the same team dynamics and sort of the same, some of the same sort of dynamics are happening. So I'm telling you, I don't think he's far off. So watch Pacific Rim and watch Avengers and tell me it's not upside down Avengers.
All right. I hear what you're saying there.
Also, you ever say something and then realize why that thought got in your head?
Yeah.
Like, you know why this reminds me of Hellboy? Because freaking Ron Perlman. Yeah. I've been looking at his name for the last 10 minutes.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. All right. Well, I don't know. I feel like this movie could be fun.
It might be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me what we have here next on our list. It's breaking top story stuff. We should have opened with this.
Yeah. You know, I mean, all right, I'm going to break it to you guys gently. So before I tell you this, I want you to get your head on straight. Get yourself situated.
Cat.
I stepped on my pet frog. Avatar 2 has wrapped filming. I repeat. Avatar 2 has wrapped filming. So how many years have they been filming? Let's just use a round number. Say 10?
Yeah.
Okay. So what's the typical ratio? Isn't it like filming for 6 months and editing for 3 months post-production?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that, right. Yeah. So by my calculation, we can look forward to Avatar 2 being released in 2026.
Now, that's if they jump right into post-production, because I'll remind you, he's still filming 3 through 5 simultaneously. So I don't know if he's going to stop to edit or...
All right, I want to take an official position here.
Yeah.
I got a problem.
What's your problem with Penn?
I'm going to tell you my problem.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you my problem. And this week's problem comes with an official Penn Cinema Podcast position. A PPP, if you will. Not to be confused with the PPP federal loans. I'm talking about a Penn Cinema Podcast official position.
Okay.
I am so sick of Avatar. Like, I'm this close to not wanting to see it.
Whoa.
I loved Avatar. I loved it. I saw it multiple times in the theater. I watched it in IMAX. It was amazing. I watched it in 3D. I watched it in 2D. I watched it the day that it had its last schedule in the theaters. I watched it again. I think I watched this movie 4 times in the theaters alone. And I don't want to be overdramatic and use like a word that should be saved for something that actually matters, but I'm so offended. I'm so offended by James Cameron. Like, who does he think he is? Like, make the freaking movie and put it out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like make, it's not going to be perfect. There's not ever in the world been a perfect movie ever made. I mean, we discussed this a few weeks ago. There's some that come close. There's some that are satisfying to different people for personal reasons. But finish your freaking movie. Wrap it up. Stick it on a freaking hard drive and send it out to the cinemas.
He's incapable of planning for the now.
He's a delicate genius.
Yeah.
Is that what you're supposed to think?
Ooh.
I don't think so. I think he's an idiot. I'm sick of it. I don't want to hear any more about it. So you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Forrest Gump. Stupid is as stupid does.
Oh my gosh, you may
be an absolute genius. Titanic was amazing. Avatar is amazing. All your movies have been amazing. But your handling of the Avatar sequels has ruined my perception of you. I'm done.
Oh, my word. Well, historically, how good has James Cameron done with sequels? Think about it.
Not great, I guess, right?
Well, Terminator 2. Okay, it's fine. Great. It was great. Terminator 2 is great.
Okay.
But did he do Aliens or did he just do Alien?
I have no idea.
Well, I mean, look at the other Aliens movies. They didn't do quite as good. So I'm just saying, I mean, I don't know what we should think. But anyway, all right, moving on.
My thing is, you're just a little bit too precious for my taste. Like, at some point, you need to... It's like the guy who never finishes writing his book. You know what I mean? Like, at some point, your book is done. Your story is done. The painting is done. I was friends with a guy who owned a jewelry store. And as you can imagine, he was constantly cleaning glass, you know, because the entire store is nothing but glass cases to display jewelry, right? And we were talking about how you're never done. And then he used the example of cleaning the glass. Like, he said, at some point, the glass is clean.
Yeah.
Like, at some point, you stop Windexing it because the glass is clean, you know, and you got to be able to – you got to know to find that point when your glass is clean. Now, what's interesting is – I'm probably going to come back and eat my words because, as we have discussed before, Avatar 2 kicks off a 6-year run of four more titles coming out every 2 years.
Yeah.
So if you know, officially look at, and by the way, James Cameron did do some of the Terminator sequels, not all of them, but he's done a lot of the follow-up Terminator stuff. But what I'm saying is, Avatar 2 is in 2022, and then they have all the way out to Avatar 5 scheduled till 2028. So I will say this about that, as my friend Hal Lord used to say, for any of my old county buddies listening, you remember Hal from HR? how you'd go into HR and you'd ask him like a life-changing question. And no matter what question you asked him, the answer would begin with, "Let me say this about that." So let me say this about that. If Avatar 2, all right, here's my final position. If Avatar 2 comes out in 2022, I will shut up. I will eat all my words and I will go back to being a big fan of Avatar, because if they can, like, we're doing the Harry Potter films, we're running all the Harry Potter franchise films, like two per week, all the way up through Deathly Hallows Part 2. And we're sort of unrolling that. And when I was putting that schedule together, I was so impressed with the steady stream of Harry Potter movies that came out. You know, it was either every other year. In one case, it was 2 years in a row. Sometimes they were, you know, not quite. It wasn't 100% predictable, but it was an impressive stream of big, successful movies coming out. So I will say that if James Cameron, in his own mastermind position, in his genius position, can actually pull this off, then I will be happy to eat my words, and I will be glad to go back to being a big fan of Avatar.
All right, so he's got some time to get it, to pull it out of the hat.
I guess.
You give him 15 years. All right. He gets two more.
All right. Now, I got another piece of news to share with you. This, I thought, was the most interesting news of the day.
Okay.
Might be the best news of the day. And partly because it's actual news. It's okay. Not just commentary on reshuffling, you know, bogus stuff that has already been out there on the world. Actually, the next two news items are both interesting. So, my boy, M. Night Shyamalan, posted an on-set pic on his Twitter as a poster, a set picture, and also he released his poster for his new film. And his new film is entitled Old. Just Old, O-L-D. And it's slated to come out in July of 2021. And then the subtitle is like, the movie's name is Old. And then next to it, it says, it's only a matter of time. And the poster is amazing. It shows all these bodies sort of falling through an hourglass. Like, it takes you a minute to sort of realize, you know, what is happening in the poster. Okay. And then when you realize it, you're like, oh, this is going to be good. So M. Night is one of my favorite directors. And I will point out to Mr. Cameron that M. Night is just filming now, September of 20, a movie that's coming out in, what, 10 months, 11 yeah. months? I mean, that's my kind of guy. He's got an idea. He's got a project. He goes, he films it. He comes back. He releases it. Good for you.
I didn't know they could even do that.
I know. Well, you got to be – see, M. Night, my boy, you got to believe – M. Night is in what we call at the Ketchum House an actual genius.
Wow.
Like, you know, you got M. Night, David Moulton, yeah. Dr. Ketchum, yeah. Oprah Winfrey. These are actual geniuses. Sylvester Stallone, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tom Brady.
Tom Brady.
He's one of those sports ball guys. You don't need to mess with him.
I can't even imagine. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So let's save this next one and go over the last one here.
Okay.
So family titles at Penn. What's going on with that?
All right. So this is nothing. This is just shameless self-promotion. But it's kind of interesting. It's just a little commentary on – we suddenly realized, Drew and I – suddenly realized that we had a steady stream of quirky, independent, or action movies coming out. Like the smaller movies that are coming out, they're all, I mean, in their own rights, they're good and everything like that. But if you're a parent or a family with kids and you're bored, like there were a couple weekends where we literally had nothing that you could bring your kids to. Like the closest thing to a kid movie was Bill and Ted's Face the Music. So we have now unveiled a whole program through the month of October. I told you about all the Harry Potter features that we're going through, but then every week there will be at least two. We have a pair each weekend, and even Disney announced they're releasing Coco, they're releasing Nightmare Before Christmas, but we lined up like the Lego movie, Willy Wonka, the 1971 version, the Lego Batman movie, and we even swallowed our pride and booked Trolls.
Whoa.
Yeah, no, that's for real. So anyway, I mean, it's just a sidebar. I don't know how many family, like with young kids we have listening, but it's just an interesting note. Like, and honestly, I did notice that a lot of like Regal and some of the larger chains are doing the same thing because they obviously saw the same thing that we saw, which was the incredible lack of family content.
Well, speaking of lack of content, we're about to give you something you'll know you'll be lacking. Samuel L. Jackson.
Sammy Jax.
Sammy Jax. He's back as Nick Fury.
Oh, great. There's a new Marvel movie coming?
No.
Not exactly.
Stop jumping on the bandwagon, Penn. He's back for our new Nick Fury series on Disney Plus. Now, my boy Penn's here. Like, this is big news. Like, who would have thought these movie stars would cross over to these Disney Plus series, right? How do you feel about that?
Movie stars crossing over to TV?
Yeah, well, Disney Plus.
Yeah, that's TV, right?
Well, yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, it's TV.
Yeah.
No, I'm saying it's television. TV. I'm watching it in my living room on a television.
Right.
All right, right, go ahead. Somebody, podcast@pensimmet.com.
It's TV.
Try to fight me on this. Tell me that Disney Plus is not TV, because it is. I'm sick of hearing about, you know, movies, you know, blah, blah, blah. No, it's television. It's brilliant. Uh-huh. It's brilliant television. You go back to Sopranos, you go back to Game of Thrones. There's been brilliant television, but it's TV. So you're inclined to think, oh, Penn's going to hate this news story. Samuel Jackson, you know, bringing a movie, you know, a treasured movie. I mean, I don't know. It might be a stretch to say that Nick Fury is an iconic movie character, but I kind of feel like he is in a way. Like ever since we saw him on The Stinger from Iron Man 2008, mm-hmm. He's sort of been one of the – I don't think he's ever been the star of one, but no. He's sort of in a way, he's kind of like the friendly – face that has sort of transcended all those titles. So here's my position, and I think we talked about this in a different context with some other stuff. I think in the context of The Mandalorian and Star Wars, but now we're doing it in the context of Marvel. I'm fine with this because what I think this does is it continues to cement the great quality that Marvel brings to entertainment. You know, and sometimes our entertainment is at home in the television in the living room, and that's great. Sometimes it's on my phone, you know, whatever. And sometimes it's a theatrical release in a movie theater. And so I think anything that continues to sort of add to the rich library, if you will, of characters and story development and world building, as David would say, I think anything that I said is cool, and I think you know, all this does is sort of continue to underscore, you know, the big boys. The main attraction is always going to be the theatrical movie, and if Nick Fury, you know, has a place on TV, nobody else should play him but Sammy Jax.
Yeah.
That's my position. And I'm okay with it. I think it's cool. I think it's cool. Good for you.
Is this the first that you've heard about this transition?
With Samuel L. Jackson?
Well, with these Marvel things.
No, it's not. But it's the first time I heard about it with, like, why? What am I missing?
Well, this is something we've been talking about them doing for a while.
But we've never had a story of, like, Robert Downey Jr. is going to be on Disney Plus.
Oh.
You know, so, bring in Iron Man or, you know, Hemsworth or, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think we've seen any of the characters from the theatrical Marvel movies appearing in a Disney Plus role. Am I right or no?
No, you're way, way off.
Who am I missing? All of them?
Okay, well, we're going to swing right into trailers. So WandaVision's trailer just came out.
Right.
Which stars Scarlet Witch and Vision from the Avengers.
Okay.
And it's all about like resurrecting Vision and,
okay,
and dimension, yep, hopping. Then we have Winter Soldier and the Falcon, probably either later this year or early spring, which are two of the characters from the Captain Marvel or Captain America movies, and deciding which one of them becomes the next Captain America. And then after that, we have, shoot, what's the other one? There's one more. And then they've cast She-Hulk, and we have Ms. Marvel, and we have Moon Knight, and they are all premiering on Disney Plus and then transitioning into the movies. So, like, this movie universe that you actually are supposed to need, there was a big thing because Falcon and the Winter Soldier was supposed to be out already, and there was this big thing about how you had to watch, you're supposed to have to watch these movies before you can see them, watch these shows before you can see the movies, because plots from the movies are then, yeah, going to transition into these shows and then back into the movies.
All right. Well, I will admit that I missed that, but I will stand by my original position, because none of those characters that you named are, none of them carried the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not talking about Mark Ruffalo. You're not talking about Robert Downey Jr. You're not talking about Chris Hemsworth. You're not talking about Scarlett Johansson, you know.
Yeah,
well, I get it that Falcon and Winter Soldier were both significant characters, and I remember seeing them in Captain America movies, and they were great. And I hear what you're saying, and I remember that we did talk about this, and I guess I'm agreeing with my six-month-old self that I still think this is a good thing for everybody, yeah, because it improves the quality of what we see when we feel like sitting on the couch watching something at home, but it also underscores, you know, sort of feeds the fan base so that when movies are coming out, people are psyched to come see them.
Yeah. The other one I forgot was there's a series based off of Loki.
Okay. Yeah.
And what I like about these is they're supposedly supposed to be limited run. So it's like 8 to 10 episodes, and this will be a chunk of time that's like, you'll be like, oh, I watched this movie, and then you watch Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and then you watch this movie, and it's not like,
yeah,
you watch season one of Falcon and the Winter Soldier and then this movie. It'll be like, no, you watch Falcon and the Winter Soldier, then this movie, then something else, whatever. Mark Ruffalo will be in She-Hulk when that comes out. So
nice.
Anyway, did you check the trailer for WandaVision?
I did. I have to say I checked it, and I saw that it was a Disney Plus thing, but I could tell immediately why we watched it.
Yeah.
Because it's so freaking good.
It does look awesome, and it's,
I mean, it looks amazing. It's the first Disney Plus show, maybe since Mandalorian, where I'm like, you know, I really want to see that. I really want to tune into that.
I just love how they're jumping between TV-ish universes that she's putting them in, but they don't even realize that they're trapped, because they're like,
oh, right,
where did you meet? And neither of them can answer the questions. And,
right.
Or when he touches the girl and she's like, oh my God, am I dead? He's like, why would you say that? Because you are. I was like, oh, snap.
But it's so funny. Like, we've talked about this before, so I'm sorry for repeating myself, but like the team at Marvel, like, they just make good stuff.
Yeah.
Like, this trailer is clearly head and shoulders above any trailer we have watched in months.
Yeah. And it not only does it look good story-wise, it looks like this could have been a teaser for a movie.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
A Marvel movie, yeah.
Right. Yeah. It should have been.
Yeah. The other trailer that we have this week is, last week we reviewed the trailer for Save Yourselves. Which
I got some feedback from some friends of mine who watched it, who agreed they LOL'd watching it.
Yeah, it looks great. I had the opportunity to see it playing in the theater last night, and the audience was laughing out loud. It was clear, awesome, clear that they hadn't seen it before. So they, apparently these people behind this movie just love comedy.
Yeah.
And they love film. And so they released a retro style black and white, what is that kind of movie type called, not film noir, but
B-film.
B-line film. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was a good trailer. What'd you think?
No, it was, I mean, my take, we didn't really introduce the trailer segment, but I was struck that we only have two trailers this week, WandaVision and Save Yourselves. And they are two of the best trailers we've watched. Last week we had, I think, something... Nobody commented on my opinion, but last week we had what could be the worst trailer of all time. And I'm not saying that WandaVision or Save Yourselves is the best of all time, but I will say they're both... It's totally worth it. If you're listening to this podcast, watch the trailer for WandaVision and watch the trailer for Save Your... Google Save Yourselves retro trailer. It's so good. I mean, I agree with you. The people, the team behind Save Yourselves is obviously having a lot of fun. They obviously had fun with the movie. They're having fun making the trailers, and the trailer was so well made. And I also even enjoyed, like, they flipped back and forth between black and white to color, yeah, modern to retro, and it was awesome. I thought it was so refreshing. I just can't wait for this movie to come out, which it opens on Friday. Thursday night at 7, and I hope that this is one of those movies that people talk about, because a lot of times we get great movies that just sort of slip under the radar, and then like 2 months from now somebody says to me, hey, are you going to get that movie Save Yourselves?
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, I mean we had it been
here and gone.
right. So two good trailers this week, WandaVision and Save Yourselves.
So I want to, last week we had the worst trailer of all time switched. And I received a text midweek from Chris All Productions, said...
The birthday boy
last week. He said, listening to the podcast now, I know way too many people who would be into Switch. That was it. And I was like, I think I replied with, time to get new friends.
There was another trailer that you don't need to watch, but I forgot to put it on the list. When Croods 2 got moved up to November, they released another trailer for it. Did we watch a trailer 6 months ago, like back when it was on the schedule for the summer?
I feel like we did, but maybe not.
Yeah, I think we did. But anyway, this is a pretty predictable movie. It was a little bit of a turnoff for me because it looks like... you know when it seems like somebody's just like trying too hard, sort of, you know? So, yeah. I don't know. Obviously, we're not the audience, but it looked cute. It looked amusing, but it wasn't exciting. Like, we watched a trailer for Soul, and you and I were both like, oh, this is going to be great. Yeah. We want to see this movie. You watch a trailer for Croods 2, and you're like, oh, I hope I don't have to end up watching that movie.
Exactly.
Right. All right, so let's get into the movie of the week. This week, we reviewed The Last Shift, starring Richard Jenkins. And this movie, did you watch it?
Yeah,
so did I. So tell us about what you thought.
This had a very indie movie feel to me. Very, very independent film feel. I think this movie was very well made. I think it achieved all of its goals in what it was trying to convey to us. I do very much think that this movie was very depressing. And it's hard to say, was it a good movie? It's a very well-made movie. I like it for that. I would not watch it again, probably. It's hard. Like, it's like, it's one of those things. Like, usually when I'm like, I don't like this movie, I think it's dumb. It's like, I respect this movie. I think it's good in a lot of ways. I don't think it was a movie. Like, I didn't really enjoy it because it struck some chords for me that, like, just really hurt. Like, I guess I just watching these people struggle and how they're like semi in a system that's trapped them there. Psychologically, financially, and just being and having lived partially in a position like that, like I'm just like, I don't want to relive that part of my life, and I don't want to think about that. It's just like, and I know that it didn't really get into it, but you kind of see how the one guy who's been stuck in it his whole life stays stuck in it, and the other guy eventually starts to pull himself out.
Yeah,
very slightly.
Yeah, I agree with you. I would say this movie, in my opinion, and I'm not trying to say I could have done better, but I feel like it didn't live up to its potential.
Yeah.
I agree that it was really well made. I agree. I mean, there were parts of it that were hysterical, really funny, you know, and kept it moving. I wasn't bored. I was kind of depressed a little bit, but you sort of knew that going into it. You know that it was it's sort of a tough topic and everything like that. But I just felt like, and it's kind of typical, you know, Andrew Cohn, you know, he sort of, you know, maybe should have seen that coming. You know, he's a little bit of a quirky guy as far as I can tell. I mean, he hasn't done a ton, but, so I just felt like it did not sort of, I guess my knock on this movie is that it never really went anywhere.
Yes. Yeah. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah. So I also was incredibly depressed at Richard Jenkins' character, that he was the same schmuck at the end that he was at the beginning.
Yeah.
Nothing changed. I thought the acting was great. This young kid, Shane Paul McGee, I felt like I would, you know, love to see him again in something.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't know what he has coming out, but you know, I would definitely watch it. You know,
the acting was really, really good. So for those who didn't get to see it, the premise is an older gentleman has been working at a fast food joint on third shift for 38 years. He's going to quit and go try and take care of his mother in Florida, but he's just kind of not been able to break it in life. He's got a brother who's kind of, you know, reached some success in life, but this guy's just not been able to do it. He's still, you know, not living a great life. But in his eyes, you know, he worked at this place for 38 years and they treated him well, but he just doesn't have a perspective of what more he could have done with himself.
I think the thing that makes this movie depressing is that you see it all around us. You see it in friends of yours. Yeah. You see it in yourself a little bit. I mean, I do, you know, and it's tough. It's sort of a hard thing to swallow. But anyway, I agree. It was a good movie. It was, you know, I don't want to knock it and say it was a bad movie. It wasn't, I didn't think it was boring.
No.
I will say I went into it a little bit better prepared for what it was. Like when you and I talked about watching this movie last week, I dare say, I think we'll have to go back and listen to the tape, but I think we might have even used the word fun,
yeah.
which would not be a word I would use to describe this. So the movie was distributed by Sony, and I was talking to my guy from Sony a couple days after we recorded the show last week, and we were talking about Broken Hearts Gallery. And I said to him, I said, are you surprised that it didn't do much business? And he said, not really. He said, The Last Shift is even more depressing. And I was like, what? he was like, oh, yeah, The Last Shift is tough to watch and blah, blah, blah. He said, it's a great movie. He basically said all the same things you and I said, which seems to be, you know, I did a little research on the internet and read a couple reviews after I watched it. And that seems to be the pretty common consensus is, you know, really well made movie that didn't quite land and is, you know, totally depressing. But so at least when I went into it, I was ready. You know, I watched it in the morning with a cup of coffee, so I wouldn't be scared and have to go to sleep depressed.
Yeah, I still went in thinking this will be a serious film with comical beats. And, you know, there were parts where we laughed.
Absolutely. Yeah,
but it was way more depressing than I expected. So.
All right. Well, next week, I know we usually do this at the end, but next week we're going to watch Save Yourselves.
Oh, we have to. Yeah.
I mean, that's got to be so fun.
If that movie turns out to be depressing.
Then we're done.
Yeah, I don't know what we can do after that. 89 and out. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, we had a good run.
All right. Just one listener note question answer prophetic type thing here. Joel Codes left a comment on Facebook and he said,
I love this comment. I love this because it's so spot on. And I I love knowing how frustrating it is for people to listen to us talk.
Yeah.
It amuses me to no end.
Mystery Gobble must be in the same boat. He says, a constant feeling while listening to the show, and then he posted a tweet. It said, the closest you can get to knowing what it's like to be a ghost is listening to a podcast where the hosts are trying to remember a piece of trivia that you know.
Perfect.
So true. So very true.
Should I let everyone in on the big secret?
Oh my gosh. Do you dare?
Is this the show where we do that?
I guess 88, man. It's time.
88, it's time? All right. Yeah. Here's the big secret that David and I didn't want to share, but I think we've carried forward the charade enough. It's time to come clean. I actually don't forget anything. I just pretend to forget stuff and get names wrong and Marvel news wrong just for your amusement, for your entertainment. What I won't do for you, beloved listener, is pretend, you know, feign this flighty, you know, nonsense. But it's all just been an act. I mean, really, I'm the original Encyclopedia Brown, if you want to know the truth.
I've been hiding that for so long. I was like, I don't want to break his appearance. I know he put so much into it. And now people know.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, usually before the show, we have about 20 minutes where I'm like, now, Penn, I really feel like you can't come at this one hard. You got to forget this a little bit.
Right, right. Soften it up. All right, David, my man, what are you watching and reading?
All right. I started watching The Warrior Nun.
What's that?
It's a Netflix show. It's a little bit of fantasy and a little bit of action about like a bunch of nuns who have halos that they put on their back, and then they get kind of superpowers and they fight bad boys. The best description ever. Actually, yeah. It's a little hokey. It's got a little bit of that like teen, like, will he kiss me in it? Which I'm just like, oh, come on. But it's actually pretty good.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
I've also been dipping into some nostalgia and playing the new Super Mario 3D All-Stars, so Mario 64. I never played it as a kid, so here I am spending my time doing that.
Nice.
So how about you?
What do you play Super Mario on? Like, what's the...
Switch. Nintendo Switch.
Nintendo Switch. All right.
Yeah.
I got a good one for you.
Yeah.
I really do. Like, all kidding aside, no jokes... I got a good recommendation for you and for all our listeners. Before I get to that, I'm also enjoying, Amy and I are continuing to enjoy The Young Pope, which was recommended to us by the Mystery Gobble. I really like it.
Okay,
but here's my recommendation. And I'm not even making a joke. It's on Netflix. It's a show called Instant Hotel. You ever heard of this?
No.
Okay, so apparently in Australia, they call Airbnbs instant hotels. Okay. And so this is a reality show. It's a lot like every other reality show. It has, you know, a good looking host who sort of, you know, navigates the thing, but it's five couples and each of them is an Airbnb host. And what they do is they take turns each hosting the four other couples. So one night I host the other four couples. The next night, the second couple hosts me and the other three. And then on each, the morning after your night at the Airbnb, you give them a rating of 1 to 10. It sounds simple and it sounds like boring, like, oh, what do you have to be in architecture or something? It is hilarious because they have managed to get the best people. They're all real people. They're not like Kardashians or celebrities or models. They're like the most real people in the most beautifully imperfect fashion you could ever hope for. And they're amazing. They're not at all trying to be funny, like in any respect whatsoever. And yet Amy and I are screaming laughing. And not only the comedy of the show, but also just the quirky things that Australians say. You know, and I'm not going to try to insult you by repeating it and having you think it sounds funny or not, but I'm just telling you, between their accent and their strange use of words that you and I know because they're English words, but they use them differently because they're Australian, it's really funny. So this is the perfect movie or show for, like, end of a stressful day, mindless, don't want to follow a complicated plot, don't want to, you know, maybe you're doing something else while you're watching it or whatever, but it is a riot, and it's the best show that we've tuned into in quite a while.
Wow. Okay, so I'm looking at this now, and I see the fashion thing. Perfect.
And I will say, it's and the other thing that makes it great, it's really well done, but it's not, like, super well done. You know what I mean? Like, it's professional and it's enjoyable to watch, and it, you know, they it's obviously done by people who know how to make a show, but it's also not quite up to the level. Like, it's not something that could make it on NBC.
This is what's crazy about this, right? It's been running for only two seasons?
I think so.
Is that right?
We're in the middle of the second season right now.
Okay. Because it looked like in Australia it had been running for seven.
It could be. Maybe it's just now getting over here on Netflix.
Yeah. Oh no, it runs on Channel 7. That's what the seven.
Well, I will say it's interesting because it's obviously was recorded some time ago because there's no mention of pandemic or, you know, anything. Right. There's obviously some kind of lag to it because everywhere they go, it's like the normal world.
Right. Oh my gosh. But, speaking of which, watching this movie this week in the restaurant business, I was just like, it was boggling because I almost don't even remember people like acting like that in the kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, pre-pandemic. Anyway, sorry. So you recommend Instant Hotel highly. Go watch it. It's hilarious.
Yes, I do. All right. I will just say, I don't know what everybody has different viewing habits, but for Amy and me, this is the perfect end of the night show. Gotcha. You know, so a lot of times one of us or both of us falls asleep during the last episode, and then the next night we have to start that episode again because we, you know, where did we fall asleep during it? You know, but like it's that perfect end of the night show.
Do you think that Amy would prescribe this to people? You need a little comedy in your life? Here's a prescription.
Yeah, absolutely. Dr. Ketchum recommends. Yep, you bet.
I love it. All right, well, that about wraps it up this week. Hey, look, if you want to get in touch with the show, best way to do that, send us an email, podcast@penncinema.com. You know, we'll take whatever you got to say, good, the bad, you want some advice, you want to give us advice, whatever. They're all good with it. Now, if you want to help the show, that's a whole other level of...
Whoa, that's a whole different thing.
Yeah, well... But we got a great number one way you could do that. What is that, Penn?
Tell a friend. But David, what if I don't have a friend?
Tell us. We're your friends.
You got friends. You got two friends. If you're listening to this podcast, you have two people in this world who care about you.
Yeah.
And you can reach us, podcast@penncinema.com. Tell us about how much you love this podcast, even if you don't.
And we'll pretend like we've never heard it before.
We'll be like, oh my God, thanks for telling me. That's amazing.
This is crazy.
And then we'll listen to it and we'll write you back. We'll be like, why did you make me ruin an hour of my day listening to this?
I had so many things I was yelling.
It was all that and so much less.
All right. Well, once again for the Penn Cinema Podcast, I'm David Bolton.
And I'm Penn Ketchum.
Take care
and party on.
's for joining us this episode. Our hosts would love to hear from you. To contact the show with your thoughts and reviews, email podcast@penncinema.com. This podcast is a production of Penn Cinema. Escape to the movies at Penn Cinema, featuring crisp digital projection, killer sound, reserved seating, and premium power recliners. With locations in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Wilmington, Delaware, and Huntington Valley, Pennsylvania. Showtimes and tickets available at www.penncinema.com.
Awesome.
Good.
Yeah.
Great. I'm happy.
It's a cut.